I wanted to figure out a way to have my money serve me in my life today, not wait. The traditional way is to wait 30 years and then have it pay you or serve you down the road. So I was really looking for a way to have my money that I had today serve me today. And I discovered that really through cash flowing rental properties.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Julie Lamb. How are you doing today, Julie?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. Julie is the co-founder and CEO of Good Egg Investments, which has invested in over 8,400 units and a total value of over $870 million. Julie is also the co-creator of the online courses Real Estate Accelerator and Passive Real Estate Investor Academy, and she is the co-host of the Investing for Good podcast. Julie, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit more about how you got started in real estate?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So I got started in real estate kind of by accident. I was more just kind of doing the traditional path of going out and buying your own home, because that's traditionally what we're taught to do. And just so happened that for my husband and I, it was 2009 and we were here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was a great time to buy. Apparently nobody was buying when they should have been buying, and we happened to be buying. So kind of got in that way. Owned and managed that property for about 7 years. And in that time, we bought more properties in 2010 in the Bay Area. And then as the market cycle started to mature a little bit more, we started to think about the equity that was in those deals. And we started to think about what kind of our next move was. And we started looking at investing out of state, which was very scary at the time. And I still remember when I sent money over to buy our first rental property out of state, I told my husband that I had sent money, wired money to a person I never met to buy a house that I never saw. And he was in shock. And I said, trust me, everything's going to be fine. And it wasn't until we had purchased a few more properties and the money started coming into the bank account that he started to kind of, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. And yeah, that's a little bit about my background. And then, you know, after single family homes, realized that if I wanted to scale and grow bigger, that I was going to have to make the move into multifamily so that I could acquire many, many more doors under one transaction rather than doing just one or two, and made that transition about 3 years ago. And been doing that ever since.
Okay, awesome. So the original properties that you were buying around the Bay Area, those were single family houses?
They were condos.
Okay. Oh, okay. Gotcha. And then what made you want to transition to out of state investing?
You know, it was so funny because I stumbled across this website, Bigger Pockets, I'm sure you've heard of it. And I was reading about this, people posting about cash flow. And I was like, cash flow? What? In real estate? Like, what does that even mean? Because everything that we had purchased in the Bay Area, even though we had bought, you know, when it was down, it was still pretty much like a break even and very little cash flow, if any. And so, you know, I read about all these people and buying investment properties for cash flow. And it just was like mind boggling. And so I started to think, okay, well, if we can take that equity that we have and invest it into these out of state properties and start to create cash flow, that would be really interesting to me, because I wanted to figure out a way to have my money serve me in my life today, not wait. The traditional way is to wait 30 years and then have it pay you or serve you down the road. So I was really looking for a way to have my money that I had today serve me today. And I discovered that really through cash flowing rental properties.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. So you felt comfortable with condos, single family houses, out of state, and then, you know, like a lot of people that I interview, there's a problem with scaling that. So it sounds like you gravitated more towards multifamily. How did you transition into that first multifamily property, and what size property was it?
Yeah, so I discovered multifamily also from Bigger Pockets, and I thought this is really interesting, but I thought, you know, I never even really knew who buys these things, right? Like, I actually used to live in a large apartment building, never knew who owns these things, and probably spent a good 6 months or so, just kind of researching and trying to understand the terminology, trying to understand who the players were. And then finally, after about 8 months or so, pulled the trigger on my first multifamily deal, but it wasn't as an active investor, meaning I didn't go out there and buy the deal myself personally and underwrite it and asset manage it. I actually partnered up with, you know, a group, which is now I know is syndication. And back then I had no idea what syndication was. And I didn't know that you could do that, that you could be a passive investor in a deal and, you know, leverage that knowledge and experience and relationships with other people. I really thought, you know, that I would have to buy the apartment building with them, put my money in and manage it somehow with them. But that was my first deal, was coming in as a limited partner in a deal. And that was a game changer for me, you know, was like the true, I had read a book probably about 5 months before that called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it talked about, you know, creating passive income streams and having your money go out there and almost like be a slave for you to go out there and work for you. And it was just like this wild idea. And when I discovered syndications, really for me, it was just this, the epitome of that, of what Kiyosaki had described in his book, of literally having your money go out there and go to work for you. And every month a distribution would come into my bank account and while I was off living my life. And so it was something that really opened my eyes to possibilities, not only for me, but also for other people out there who didn't know what syndications were. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then it sounds like from there, that's kind of what sparked Good Egg Investments. Is that right? Because I mean, it sounds like you helped. Could you talk to that a little bit and kind of let people know what you guys do? I love the educational component of what y'all are doing with, you know, helping people getting started investing passively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it kind of started very organically. When I started off educating other folks, it was not necessarily to start a business or to move over to the active side. I had made that first investment. And then over the coming months, probably about 6 months or so, I was just talking to anybody that would listen to me. I was like, you need to know about this. And it was friends, family. I started posting in a mother's group that I'm a part of in San Francisco and, you know, just responding to other people's questions that they had around things that we all struggle with as mothers and as parents, things like college savings, working a second job, creating extra money in the family, travel, and all these kinds of things. And I would go into the groups and just talk about my experiences with real estate investing, the decisions I had made with out-of-state investing, you know, how multifamily syndications work. And my Facebook Messenger inbox would just explode. Like I would just post one thing about, oh, you know, here's why I don't do a 529 plan. And here's why I'm investing in a syndication instead. And people were just really intrigued with the idea, as was I when I first discovered it. And it really came from a place of just wanting to share and educate. And that's really what brought my business partner, Annie, and I together when we met. We met at a real estate investing conference. And I still remember we were sitting on a couch and it was after hours after the event. And we were talking about why we were in syndication and why we wanted to get into it. And she's a mom and she has two young kids. And I'm a mom and I have three young kids. And we started talking about how important it was to us that other mothers learn about these types of investments. And that was kind of how we came together. And probably about 2 months after that, we formalized Good Egg Investments and came together to basically with that same thought in mind that we want to educate other families. You know, now we've kind of expanded. It's not just mothers. Over the course of the last couple of years, we've attracted not only women, but a lot of dads too and men who want to work with us. And so, you know, our whole thing is we're here to be a resource for investors, to educate them, to, you know, learn, to invest alongside with us. That's why we have the podcast, the Investing for Good podcast now. And so, you know, a lot of it just came from the desire to want to help other people. And I think that when you come from that place of just wanting to help genuinely, that it's not like, hey, I'm here to sell you something, that's how you can be successful in a business like ours and what we do.
Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. You met Annie and then kind of launched 2 months after that. How did you know that you would be, you know, such great partners? It seems like you both work really well together. How did you know that it was meant to be?
Well, you know, first of all, I just want to say that Annie and I got really lucky because I know I had been searching for a partner for a long time before I met her. And I don't think she was, but I know that generally speaking, people in the real estate industry are always looking for great partnerships, right? And so I think part of it is luck, but I think part of it too was, you know, just that the reasons behind why we were doing what we were doing were so much in alignment. That was the first thing. It's kind of like when you're out there and you're dating and you realize that, you know, you're getting along with somebody, but your morals and your values are really there. We, you know, at the end of the day, the goal was very much the same and why we were doing everything we were doing. And then it was just realizing that she had a strong skill set that was my weakness and vice versa. And then it was like, yeah. And so it was like, she wanted to do all the blogging and the videos, and I don't like being on camera and I don't like writing. And she loved all of that. And I loved talking with investors and I loved sort of the strategy aspect behind everything we were doing. And she hated all of that. And so it was this kind of like match made in heaven when we came together. I had heard this on a podcast once that if you can find a partner whose, you know, strengths are your weaknesses and vice versa, that together you guys will be a power team. And that stuck with me for so long because it was probably about a year and a half until I met Annie. And I had always really been looking for that. And when I met her, that was exactly what it was. And I feel like that's definitely contributed to, you know, the success that we've had over the years.
Yeah, that's awesome. Could you speak a little bit about kind of your educational platform and the resources that you guys created as far as helping passive investors? I know, you know, let's say there's a mother or father who's very interested in lifestyle design and wants to get into passive investing. What's kind of some resources that you've created for those types of investors?
Yeah, you know, so it's really interesting. Now at this point, I've talked with hundreds of investors over the years. So we've really been able to sort of distill what their pain points are and the things that they're struggling with. But in the beginning, it started out very simple and very small. And I would, you know, talk with investors and everything that they would ask me about, I would be furiously like writing down, like, here are our next blog topics. If this person is asking about, it's likely that somebody else in their same shoes have the same question. And so that's what we did. And, it, you know, I would relay to Annie, here's all the questions I got today. We can make like 10 blog posts out of this. And she would get to work and make those blog posts. But that's really what it was creating the blog posts to answer questions and to educate, and then the video content. And the reason that we kind of did both is that because I realized that people learn, as do I, learn and intake and absorb material differently, right? And some people are very, you know, visual people and they need to see a person talking and they need to see it on screen. And other people are more, you know, where they need to read something like a blog post. And so we have those kind of two portals or ways that we can share information. So we have a YouTube channel and then we also have tons of blog posts. I've actually had people who I've talked to and they've said, I have consumed every video that you guys have ever put together and every blog post that you've written, which, you know, at the time that they had said that was quite a bit of content. And that's always been something that we felt when we think about why an investor doesn't want to invest, the thing that I always go back to, because when I ask myself why I'm not investing in a particular deal or in a particular asset class, for me, it's because of a lack of education, a lack of knowledge, right? Usually most people, if they have enough information that they can make a decision on, then they feel much more confident, much more, you know, excited about the opportunity because they feel like they're making the right decision. And so we've always sort of prided ourselves on that. And we also have the Passive Investor Academy that we created for investors to take yourself from a place of, hey, I don't know anything at all about syndications, to a place of, wow, I could almost be an expert now on syndications because I know so much. And I think that's the level of education that you need to have when you're investing in these syndications, because you're oftentimes handing over a minimum of $50,000 to $100,000. And you need to have that confidence to know what you're doing, to know who you're working with, and make sure that you're not making a bad decision. And so we've always sort of made that very important to make sure that by the time we, you know, work with investors, that they are very educated through the content that we put out so that they can make sure that they're making the right decision with not only of the investment they're making, but the people that they're working with us.
So let's talk about your strategy a little bit, because I know you've been investing passively for years and now you're on the active side as well. If someone you know, a lot of these people are busy professionals. They don't have tons of time to kind of vet operators, look into the due diligence of every deal and go super deep on research. So, you know, if they like you and trust you and want to co-invest in deals that you're involved with and trust your expertise, and obviously you've got a great track record, could you kind of explain a little bit about, you know, how you choose the operators that you work with, and then what kind of strategies you prefer for deal size and kind of, you know, the risk profile and that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I love that you asked about the partners that we work with first, because that's really where it starts for us, is really, you know, finding people within the industry through networking and different relationships who are putting deals together. And then it just becomes a matter of, well, is this somebody that, you know, we feel like, you know, we can add value to, and vice versa. And we really look at that relationship pretty hard. And over the years, we've actually only worked with, I want to say like 4 or 5 different people. So not a lot. And really only 2 of those we've worked pretty extensively with, meaning we've done multiple deals with them. But I think when you approach it that way, when you look at, because at the end of the day, it's not about the deal, right? Like I feel like investors get so caught up in that, and they're always looking at, you know, well, what about this line item here? Or what about the cap rate that it's trading at? Or what about the exit price? Because, and that matters. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but really knowing who you're working with is such a key component to a successful deal, because anything can look good on paper, but if you don't know who you're working with and that person doesn't have the level of integrity that they need to have and doesn't have the proper, you know, management experience, they can take a good deal on paper and make it go south pretty quickly. So that's really where it starts, is it starts with, is this a group that we feel like we have a great relationship with? How long have we known them? The people that we've worked with, we've had oftentimes a year plus 2-year relationship before we ever even did a deal with them, so that we can really get to know each other. We would meet at real estate conferences. We would see kind of what their track record was, you know, what kind of deals that they're doing. And then if there's a good relationship, then we dial down and we say, okay, well, what markets are you investing in, and what types of deals are you doing? And if there's interest, you know, on our part, or they're, you know, interested in working with us, then that's how we come together. And so really it starts with that. Is there a solid relationship behind it first? Because this is a long-term thing. You know, this isn't just like you do a deal and then you're done. A lot of these deals are 5-year, 5-7-year hold. So you're going to be in a relationship with these people for a long time. And so that's really where that piece of it starts. And then the strategy piece on what we've done. So it's really funny, because it's actually evolved over the years. When I first got into this 4 years ago, it was, you know, I would say the risk profile was definitely more, we were willing to take on more risk than we are now. And, you know, over the 4-year time period, that kind of transitioned into less and less and less risk. And the risk being the value add component, because typically we did B class value add deals. So workforce housing, value add, meaning that we're going in there, we're doing some renovations, and we're increasing the rents. And so typically we would do heavier value adds that also had a CapEx component to it, like 3-4 years ago. That was totally comfortable for us. And then like 3 years ago and 2 years ago, it was like, okay, now we're looking for deals that don't have hardly any CapEx, exterior maintenance repairs. And it's really just an opportunity for us to go in and renovate the interiors and bump the rents. And so that decreases a lot of the risk when you get into these value add deals, when you don't have a lot of the CapEx, meaning like roofs, foundations, HVAC, plumbing, you know, large expenses, things like that. And it also meant that if we were to hit some kind of a recession, similar to kind of where we are now, that if we wanted to put the brakes on the interior renovations, we could, because it wasn't something that had to be done, like with CapEx repairs. And so over the last couple of years, we've really shifted our focus from a little bit bigger reposition type deals to more of these strictly interior renovation deals. And then we've kind of moved away from B class deals. And then we kind of moved into B plus A minus assets, where you're collecting cash flow day one. And really, we don't even need to do any value add. In fact, we had one deal that we did earlier this year where the value add wasn't even something that we're going to do in the next 2 years. It's something that's going to happen probably in year 3 or 4. It's a 7-year hold. And so it's kind of a hybrid play, where it's like a cash flow A-class property that we're buying for cash flow today, but before we exit, we're going to turn it into a value add kind of a deal. So the approach has kind of changed a little bit depending on what's happening in the market cycle and where we are with everything, you know, as you know, we're in the middle of COVID right now. And so there's a lot of unknowns. And to, you know, do a value add deal, you know, it's hard to say whether you'll be able to increase those rents to market or not. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that kind of go into that. So that's the reason we kind of shifted a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree 100%. I think it's great that you made that transition before COVID. I feel like a lot of people realize that too late and they're in trouble right now. So that's awesome. Is there, what are the kind of typical returns that you look for in a deal like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, like minimum we want to see a 7% cash flow in year one, but that has been true for most of the deals we've done. And that cash flow needs to happen at closing. So we generally don't like to do deals, you know, there's some out there where the operator won't pay out until 6 months to 12 months after closing. And really that the reason is because they need that money to operate and they can't free up the money. They need to bump the rents. And that was really risky for us. So all the deals that we've always done have always cash flowed from the very beginning. At closing, you know, 30 to 45 days, people get their first distribution. And that's always been key. So I would say, you know, 7% is kind of the minimum now. It used to be 8 or 9% 4 years ago. And now you're looking at somewhere around 6 to 7%, especially in that year one. But annualized returns, you know, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, you were still looking at like 20, 22% returns. And now you're probably looking at about a 17% return annualized. And so that's kind of, you know, return wise, cash flow wise, you know, on an equity multiple, we're still somewhere, you know, 1.7 to 2, something like that.
And what would the holding period be for something like that?
Usually these are 5-year holds. We've got two properties in the portfolio that are 7, but most of them are 5-year holds. And, but even, you know, that being said, even with a 5-year hold, most of the deals that we do, because they're value add deals, we have the opportunity between year one and two, or even year three, to think about either doing a refinance or selling, because we've bumped the value of the property so much through the renovations that we've done. So even though we talk about it being a 5-year hold, there's a good chance that, you know, we could either two things, sell or do that refinance to capture that equity that we've been able to create through the renovations that we did. So I would say even on a projected 5-year hold property, there's still a chance somewhere between the second and third year that we could exit that deal and still get, you know, close to the 20% annualized return.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So, Julie, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
So the best real estate deal I've done, I wish I could say it was an apartment deal, but most of the apartment deals we've done have been very even keeled. But the best deal that I've done was purchasing, this was about 4 years ago, was purchasing a duplex. Again, sight unseen, husband was not happy. And it was brought to me by a property manager who had a lead from a wholesaler, and it was a duplex, C-class property, and paid, I think, $55,000 for it or something crazy like that. And went in, we did some upgrades, and then kind of did the BRRRR strategy with the buy, refinance, rent, renovate, repeat. And got most of our money out of that deal. And it, you know, I'm probably making like a 50 to 60% cash on cash return just because there's so little money that's left in the deal. And then it still had so much room to cash flow. So if I could just find like 100 more of those, I'd be good. But unfortunately, that was 4 years ago, and things in that market have, you know, changed dramatically. The value of that home actually has gone up more than double. So, you know, in the last 4 years. So yeah, that was probably the best one.
That's awesome. You still own that property?
I do. Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And what would you say is the worst real estate deal that you've done?
So the worst was also a single family home property that I bought. And this one was not a duplex. It was a single family home. I, you know, looked at it on Google and did my research on the neighborhood, researched the crime stats and all of that. And, you know, bought it. And then I bought it in like October, and then we moved into like November and the holidays, did the renovations. It sat vacant for like 3 months, finally got it rented in March of the following year after it sat for a half year, and rented it to someone who decided to pay rent for a month and then never paid again, had to go through an eviction. and then got that person out. The house got broken into after that person moved out. It was just a nightmare. And I stayed away from single family homes after that time. And really for the last couple of years have been focused solely on apartments. But more recently, in light of all of the events that are happening, kind of moved back into, you know, acquiring some single family homes and smaller duplexes as well, just for my own personal portfolio. But yeah, that one was a nightmare for sure.
And other than getting into multifamily and maybe pivoting from single family houses at the time, was there anything else that you learned from that experience that you now take with you when you analyze future deals?
Yes, going out to look at the property, you know, making sure that you're, you know, going out there physically to drive the area, you know, meeting people in the communities, talking to the Uber driver, not so much anymore, but, you know, talking to the Uber drivers, asking them, hey, what's happening around this area? You know, is this a safe place to be? Is, you know, what kind of people live in this apartment community? That's a question that I ask often. You know, I think had I done that due diligence on that one property in Indiana, I probably wouldn't have bought it, you know, because I would have gotten some honest feedback from outsiders who weren't a part of the deal. I think, you know, making sure that, you know, you understand when you're buying, when you're looking to lease up, which I think is a little bit different with apartment communities, but, you know, we were sliding right into like the holiday season and sat empty for months. You know, I think also, you know, knowing who you're working with, which is part of the reason why we make sure that we've known, you know, partners for years before we actually ever do a deal with them. That person that I bought that deal from, I just, you know, didn't really know who he was. And he was a wholesaler I met and decided to do a deal with him. Not that it was his fault, but we just, you know, I probably would have had a better idea of his inventory and the types of deals he would bring had we had a longer standing relationship. So, but yeah, there was a lot that I learned from that. So, you know, mistakes are always, I think if you can find the good and you know, figure out what you've learned from that, the mistakes that you've made, that mistakes can oftentimes be a good thing for you. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. Well, Julie, we're getting a little bit short on time here, but I'd love to ask just one final question. What advice would you give to a passive investor just looking to get started? Maybe someone with three kids, they're busy, you know, they want to create cash flow for themselves. What's the best thing for them to do to get started?
So it's really two things. I would say the first thing is educate yourself. Like I was saying earlier, the more education that you can give yourself and self-educate, the better decision that you're going to make sure that it's the right decision for you. And then I guess the second thing I would say is network, network, network. When I first got into it, I talked to anyone and everyone that would give me the time of day. And I certainly feel like that helped me immensely in the early days when I just didn't know who was what and what was who and what meant what, you know? And so when you're talking to people, you just get so much insight into, you know, it's almost like getting insider information. And I would say that those two things that I did earlier on have definitely served me well over the last couple of years.
And where can others go to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so a couple of different ways. One way is to go to our website at goodegginvestments.com. They can also email me at julie@goodegginvestments.com, julie@goodegginvestments.com. And also, we have a book that we wrote, actually, especially for passive investors. So if anybody out there wants to get educated and learn everything, you know, soup to nuts about passive investing and syndications, I'll go ahead and give you a code that you can share with your audience and they can get the book for free.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I'll share it in the show notes. Thanks for giving that away. That's awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time to be here. I appreciate it and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.